On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us, our series on inequality in the Baltimore region. If you own any stock, even a few shares, this is the time of year you can make your voice heard in the corner offices of the world's largest public corporations. Most companies hold their annual shareholder meetings between March and June. And now, thanks to a U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission rule that emerged from the 2010 Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act, publicly held companies are required to put their executive pay packages before shareholders for a non-binding vote. And that's the inequality focus for our program today. Inequality in what people get paid within the same company. There is a number that people use to track that, the ratio of what a CEO gets paid to what that company's average worker gets paid. 3 or 4 decades ago, that ratio was about 40. Measurements over the last few years capture it well over 300. Why has CEO pay risen so sharply compared to regular wages? In a few minutes, I'll explore that with Michael Faulkender, associate professor at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. First, senior producer Lawrence Lanahan looks at what shareholders, government agencies, and legislators across the nation and here in Maryland are doing to try to reverse the trend.
Bethesda-based Lockheed Martin is the biggest publicly held company in Maryland, according to Forbes magazine. Last year, they made $47 billion in sales, mostly to the Pentagon. Down in St. Mary's County, over 100 members of the International Association of Machinists work for Lockheed Martin at the Naval Air Station Patuxent River, where the company tests fighter jets. The union says machinists there make between $15 and $33 an hour. Last year at Lockheed Martin, then-CEO Robert J. Stevens brought home $1,800,000 in salary, 26 times what the highest-paid machinist makes working full-time. Of course, Stevens also gets bonuses, stocks, options, and other compensation. His total pull for 2012? $27,549,444. Some would say no one should make that much money, regardless of performance. Others would say that the market determines fair pay based on a CEO's performance, and that they're being paid partly not to take their talent elsewhere, even if it means less money for everyone else. We'll call this the Joe Flacco argument. When the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Bill passed in 2010, it allowed shareholders to have their say, and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, started requiring shareholders to vote, up or down, on executive pay packages. Nearly all say-on-pay votes in 2011 were yes votes, 98% according to Corporate Board magazine. They were strong yes votes, too, on average, getting the support of 9 out of 10 shareholders. The vote is non-binding, but it can send a message.
Our clients tell us that the most important issue is pay for performance, and the second most important issue is pay for performance as well.
That's Patrick McGurn, special counsel with proxy advisory firm Institutional Shareholder Services, or ISS, based here in Maryland. Corporate Board magazine says that when ISS gives a thumbs up to a pay package, an average of 94% of shareholders vote yes. That goes down to 73% when ISS gives a thumbs down.
We've seen shareholders giving more and more weight in the actual vote decisions that they make to the level of responsiveness that the board showed the year before.
ISS listens to shareholders. A Corporate Board magazine analysis says that ISS will likely recommend that shareholders abstain or vote no if the previous year's vote showed less than 70% support, unless the company makes adequate changes. In 2011, 69% of Lockheed Martin shareholders approved of the CEO pay package. They voted that way despite Lockheed Martin making some last-minute changes to the package, changes that actually convinced ISS to reverse an initial recommendation for shareholders to vote against it. In 2012, ISS recommended a vote for Lockheed Martin's CEO pay package. Yet a few weeks later, just 68% of Lockheed Martin shareholders approved of the pay package. The company took notice. 2 weeks ago, Lockheed Martin disclosed even more compensation reforms. They've set the compensation for their new CEO, Marilyn Hewson, at below the market rate, hoping she'll earn her way up to market rate in 2 years. On April 25th, shareholders will convene and vote on Hewson's pay package. ISS will release their recommendation for Lockheed Martin's say-on-pay vote a few weeks before that meeting. Another regulation from Dodd-Frank requires publicly held companies to calculate the ratio between CEO compensation and the median total compensation for all other employees. That ratio has ballooned over the past couple decades. The thing is, the SEC hasn't written that rule yet. I wrote to 18 of Baltimore, Maryland's biggest publicly held companies asking if they'd share that ratio with us. None did. Some companies do share it. Whole Foods sets a cap on their CEO's salary, 19 times the company's annual average wage. Whole Foods Vice President Mark Ernstein told the Wall Street Journal, quote, "It doesn't take months and months and millions of dollars to calculate this. It's a relatively straightforward process that takes a few days." Wendy Davis is a partner at law firm Cooley LLP, and at a January webinar hosted by Equilar, an executive compensation and corporate governance data firm, Davis said companies are already talking about so-called internal pay equity in public SEC filings. Not just CEOs compared to everyone else, but also compared to the next couple executives at the top of the ladder, their potential successors.
I think if you don't expect management and the employees are looking at that when it comes out, you're kidding yourself. Don't underestimate their morale impact.
But as far as calculating the ratio that Dodd-Frank mandates?
Dodd-Frank required about 400 sets of regulations. And if I'm a betting woman, I'm going to say that they're hoping that this is the last one that they tackle so that it'll go away before they have to tackle it. And to junior budding engineers out there, the person who figures out the software on how to calculate total compensation for every single employee in every country with all the various different kinds of foreign legal compensation that's required, God bless you, because you're going to be a bazillionaire. And I still don't understand how it's useful. At the end of the day, this feels like, forgive me, compensation porn.
When will the SEC actually write the pay ratio rule? The news site HousingWire.com reported last year that SEC Chair Mary Shapiro said the rule would probably be done by June 2012. We reached out to the SEC and received this comment from spokesperson John Nestor. Quote, "Although Congress did not set a time frame for commission action, the commission and staff are working hard to adopt an effective rule as soon as possible." Unquote. Here in Maryland, officials, legislators, and institutional investors have made their own moves to affect executive compensation. Paul Pinsky is a Democratic state senator from Prince George's County. In Maryland, executive compensation is a legitimate deductible expense for business tax filers. During last year's special session, Pinsky introduced a bill that essentially says you can't make that deduction unless the CEO's pay is 25 times the lowest paid worker's pay or lower. He's introduced the bill several times.
I have to tell you, it didn't get a very long look in the Budget and Tax Committee. They say, well, you're going to scare away companies. They're not going to be able to pay their CEOs. And I always remind them, a company can pay their CEO as much as they want. The question is, how much should the state of Maryland, as a policy, say is a legitimate business expense?
Pensions and mutual funds have some sway on pay, too. Dean Kenderdine is the executive director of the Maryland State Retirement Agency. Their pension fund holds $40 billion in assets. He says in 2003, their board established an ad hoc committee to work on proxy voting policies.
This was post-Enron, WorldCom, and we had had proxy voting guidelines up until that point. But it was at that point that the Board of Trustees made the determination that it wanted to be much more activist in its orientation toward proxy voting.
T. Rowe Price is a Baltimore-based firm handling over $500 billion in assets. They have a screening tool with 80 different metrics to identify companies that need a closer look. Corporate governance specialist Donna Anderson says T. Rowe Price voted no on 12% of last year's CEO pay votes for U.S. companies.
You know, before Dodd-Frank, shareholders didn't get a vote on pay, so our only option was to vote against the members of the Compensation Committee. And you would think that would be effective.
Not so much, though.
But now that there is a line item on the proxy that says, you know, say on pay, it's personal. I've been really surprised at the level of responsiveness and attention that not only Compensation Committee members, but CEOs pay when they are at risk of being, you know, embarrassed in a public setting about their pay.
Will more embarrassment in the form of a CEO to average worker pay ratio make CEOs and boards even more responsive? We'll see when the SEC finally writes the rule that the law says they must write.
Maryland Morning Senior Producer Lawrence Lanahan. The webinar from Equilar that Lawrence mentioned is helpful for understanding all these issues. We'll link to the full thing at our website, linesbetweenus.org. We reached out to CEOs at 18 of Baltimore and Maryland's biggest public companies. Under Armour's Kevin Plank was traveling and couldn't join us. A Lockheed Martin spokesperson said CEO Marilyn Hewson might be able to answer questions by email, but she'd not responded by yesterday afternoon when we produced this piece. The other 16 companies either declined to participate or didn't respond. What we do have for each of these 18 companies at linesbetweenus.org is the total yearly compensation for the CEO of each company, the percentage of shareholders who rejected those compensation packages, and, for companies who were willing to provide it, the ratio between the CEO's compensation and the median compensation for the rest of the workers. That's the one that the Dodd-Frank law says the SEC will eventually have to demand. Actually, none of the 18 companies provided it, but we're still leaving a blank in case they eventually do. In that list of 18 is one company not based in Maryland, energy giant Exelon, based in Illinois. We included them because they recently merged with Constellation, which had been one of Baltimore's biggest public companies. Former Constellation CEO Mayo Shattuck III, who is still based in Maryland, retired from Exelon on February 28th. His pension plan is valued at over $49 million. On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. You're listening to The Lines Between Us.
I'm Assistant Producer Jamila Kay. You're listening to Maryland Morning's The Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
If you look at average CEO pay among firms listed in the S&P 500, it nearly tripled between 1992 and 2007, the year the economy started to tank. If you look at the 500 biggest companies in America, the average CEO pay went up nearly six times over. It's dropped a bit since, but CEO pay is still growing much stronger than average wages, which the Social Security Administration says rose 75% in that time frame. Why has CEO pay so sharply outpaced worker income over the past couple decades? Here to walk through it with us is Michael Falkender. He's an associate professor at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. A couple years back, he co-authored an overview of research on corporate executive compensation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
What is the biggest driver of CEO pay growth?
I'm somewhat hesitant to say that it's a single factor. There are a number of factors that have contributed to the growth.
Let me then propose one.
Okay.
The shift of much of the compensation from straight out pay to stock options and equity related.
Right. And that is definitely one of the significant factors that we've seen. If you go back to the 1992 time period, much of the pay at that time was salary and bonus. About around the time of 1992, we saw a large introduction in more performance-based compensation, specifically compensation tied to stock performance, with the introduction of restricted stock grants and stock options. Not so much the introduction, but a significant expansion of them.
And why?
There was a large push to have more performance-based compensation, a recognition that when shareholders benefit, CEOs should benefit, but also that when shareholders do poorly, CEOs likewise should not receive as much pay. And so generating improved alignment between outcomes for shareholders and outcomes for CEOs was something that was pressed by advocates for better corporate governance in the 80s and 90s.
Does research show that CEO pay tracks with CEO performance?
It has gotten better over time. There was a very famous study showing that for the average $1,000 increase in shareholder compensation and shareholder wealth, CEO pay went up by only about $3. So the argument there was that if it takes quite a lot of effort to make an extra $1,000 for investors, if only $3 of that extra $1,000 goes to the CEO, then is that sufficient incentive for them to engage in the effort that would generate that higher wealth level? And it was viewed that there needed to be much tighter matching of compensation to performance.
What are the risks in this switch from cash to stock and options?
Particularly with stock options. For those of you that aren't familiar with how stock options work, when the stock gets above a certain, when the stock price gets above a certain predetermined level, the option starts to pay off. When the stock is below that threshold, the payoff is zero. So they get all of the upside, all of the greater upside from the greater risk taking, but the downside stays the same, zero. And so there are some that have argued that excessive reliance upon stock options gives senior executives a lot of upside, but it doesn't sufficiently constrain them on the downside and that it would potentially induce risk taking.
You're listening to The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast, talking about CEO pay with University of Maryland Business School Associate Professor Michael Faulkender. Some critics say that CEOs have too much influence on compensation decisions. Who determines CEO pay?
Ultimately, it's the compensation committee of the board of directors. And so it is true that because CEOs play a significant role in who gets appointed to the board, they potentially have an opportunity to influence their own pay.
One of the things you've written about is the importance of having independent directors, right. That is to say directors who are not employees of that firm, on the compensation committee. But aren't some of them CEOs elsewhere? I mean, is there kind of an old boys club among CEOs?
They are, and some of the worst examples are you can be an independent director, but there's, but let's say that I sit on your compensation committee and you sit on my compensation committee. We're both CEOs of publicly traded firms. We are independent as far as any regulator is concerned. If you think about the qualifications that are necessary for a good board member, generally speaking, a CEO understands the issues that are confronting boards of directors. It is one of the innate challenges within corporate governance to find people who are truly independent and uncorruptible through the process, yet still qualified.
So do you have suggestions for how to keep CEOs from meddling in their own pay without leaving fingerprints?
Certainly, I am in favor of those who have argued for non-executive chairman. I think that is a step in the right direction. There is no silver bullet.
Part of what that compensation committee does in many cases is something called benchmarking.
Mm-hmm. The standard process that firms and boards of directors and their compensation committees use to explain why they're paying the level of pay that they're providing is that they compare themselves to other firms and argue that these are firms with whom we compete for talent, that if we want to keep our senior executives, we need to pay similar or better than what is being paid at these other firms. This has been the focus of some of my work over the last couple of years. The firms themselves choose who they benchmark against.
This series, The Lines Between Us, is about inequality. And so let me ask you to go from looking internally at what the corporations are doing to how much influence does the growing gap between CEO pay and the wages of other workers, how much impact does that have on inequality overall?
Certainly it's a contributor, but again, it's not something that's limited to just CEOs. If it were limited to CEOs, this huge increase in the multiple between average CEO pay and average worker, then it would be of great concern about the viability of corporate governance.
You write, quote, "The evidence is inconclusive about whether average CEO pay is excessive," close quote. I want to bore into that word excessive,
okay,
because it sounds like a personal value judgment. Do you as a researcher have an operational definition of excessive?
I think that our operational definition is more a relative statement than an absolute statement. So just as some would argue that Joe Flacco's $120 million quarterback compensation package is excessive, but others would argue that, well, if the value that he's going to bring to the Baltimore Ravens makes that franchise more valuable by $120 million over the next 6 years, then why shouldn't it go to Joe Flacco rather than to the owner of the Ravens? If that's the definition of excessive, then you could probably apply that to investment bankers, CEOs, and hedge fund managers. If the CEO turns a $200 billion enterprise into a $300 billion enterprise because of the vision that the CEO has, how much of that $100 billion increase in value should accrue to the CEO? Is $10 million of that excessive? That is a value judgment.
Thank you. I appreciate you walking us through it.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Michael Faulkender is an associate professor at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. We have a chart for 18 of the biggest public companies in Baltimore and Maryland showing their CEO pay and how shareholders voted on that pay package. It's online at linesbetweenus.org. I'm Sheila Cass. That's it for The Lines Between Us today. Later on Maryland Morning, the art of storytelling, American visionary art museum style. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus, or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.